Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We booty, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. I'm your host, Chris. Marshall will be joining us very, very shortly. Hopefully everybody's having a good week so far. We got a lot to talk about when it comes to week 8 as far as the betting lines and predictions and upsets and against the spread and all that good stuff. First, we're going to talk week 7. And oh, what a week 7 it was. We had a huge upset. Unbeaten number 3 Georgia goes down swinging in double overtime to South Carolina. Big upset there. They had missed a field goal. Georgia missed a field goal, and they ended up getting the job done. There was a variety of, upsets or very tightly matched games within the top 25 or just outside of the top 25. So we got a lot to talk about from week 7, no doubt about it. As far as this week 8, though, we're definitely going to preview, debate, and predict, along with the betting lines banter, all the games for week 8, whether it's the marquee matchups like number 7 Penn State versus number 16 Michigan, or number 13 Utah versus number 17 Arizona State, number 12 Oregon versus number 25 Washington, and just a wide variety of just good games under the radar for week 8. As well. So we're definitely going to break it all down and come up with something. Of course, we got to talk about the crappy pick of the week, where my co-host just throws the worst game at me, just randomly. The worst game on the schedule, the worst teams he can find, and I just pick it blindly, okay? So we're going to talk about that. That actually closes the show. First and foremost, though, before we get into this Week 7 recap, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, it can be found right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives. It's basically the headquarters. However, if you want to listen to the College Ball Show under the Ropeadope Radio podcast, you can find it on iTunes, Player FM, Spricker, Stitcher, really anywhere. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including iHeartRadio. You can find the show on Spotify. In fact, you can use Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn to try to download the show, I should say. I'm over here stuttering. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. It's football. It's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu. That's betnow.eu. They have a promo code TGT. That's TGT as in the grueling truth, okay? One more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you already have and you're just not happy, you're a sports fan, you need a little bit of cable. You don't need some huge package that's going to run you $200 or whatever. Try AT&T TV now, okay? There's no annual contract. They do have the 7-day free trial. However, the plans start as low as $50. That's HBO included. Stream it anywhere. Cloud DVR included. Like I said, no annual contract. That's AT&T TV now. It's streaming cable, and I actually use it myself. It's not just a promo. Although it is a promo. Anyway, let's get into some of this week 7 stuff. Obviously, South Carolina got things started, had, I'd say, one of our biggest upset, if not the biggest upset of the year so far. I think there's a bigger point spread, underdog upset, that type of thing. No doubt about it. But as far as a highly ranked squad, a squad like Georgia, that some people think that they were going to, and they still could, you know, I was going to say cut down the nets, but that's not until March or April, actually, for college basketball. But a lot of people thought they'd be in that final four, right, the semifinals. So big, big win there, 20-17, like I said, in double overtime, missing field goals and still ended up getting it done. So we might as well start there, along with the Red River rivalry, Oklahoma and Texas. That one started out, surprisingly enough, as a defensive battle, when usually you think, you know, it's a shootout. I think the over-under was set at like 76.5 or something like that, and I thought it had a chance of going over. Now, it ended up 34-27, Oklahoma getting the W, but which is somewhat high scoring. But for a while there, it was like stuck on 10-3. We didn't really know what was going on there. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall, and see how he's doing. What's going on, Marshall? How the hell are you, buddy?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. I'm excited to talk football today. But then after the podcast tonight, if the Nationals win, they're in the World Series. I've never been able to celebrate a team I like in baseball going to the World Series that major I can understand. So I'm excited for sports all around. Obviously football, but man, if I can, I might buy a little bottle of champagne, have a little mini celebration. So I'm excited for tonight, man, but I'm having a good day.
Nice. Well, that's always fun. And when you look at the South Carolina upset,
beautiful.
This is from Chris Falco. I don't know. This was from him on Twitter.
Oh,
he said perspective on what is it?
Chris Falco. He's one of those guys on game day.
Okay, Falco. That's it. Okay. So he basically tweeted out this perspective on South Carolina, basically, you know, the big upset. So since 2000, there's been 14 teams to win outright as a 20-point underdog. And then they were the dog the next regular season game. And those 14, same 14, went 11-3 against the spread in the next game. So just,
wow,
you know, something to think about there. That was a major upset. And to have, you know, to miss a field goal but then make one, and it just all sorts of upside down stuff going on in that game. But they ended up winning the game, and once again Georgia finds a way to lose to an unranked team. Now South Carolina is not like a bummy team. They actually, you know, for a while they actually hung with Alabama for a while anyway. I looked at this game as far as against the spread, and I'll just fully admit it, I didn't take it, but I wanted to jump on it thinking, you know, the Gamecocks could sneak under that. I forgot what it was, 26 or something like that? I can't remember, but I didn't. I didn't do it, and I kind of regret it, but it didn't even matter. They won outright. That was a shocker to me. And then also we had, like I said, the Red River rivalry, which you just assume, you know, was going to be a high-scoring game. Now, Oklahoma got to 34 points and whatnot, but turned out to be more of a defensive battle than we first thought. What did you think of those two games from last Saturday?
I couldn't believe how bad Fromm played. Now, I haven't seen the guy play much, but I know he gets a good amount of love. But, man, he had a bad day. He had a quarterback rating of 34, which is not good. He had three interceptions. He was 28 of 51. He didn't even throw for 300 yards, man. He just looked off. I basically started watching that game probably from the second quarter on. I was kind of watching back and forth that in Texas. But Georgia's offense never got into a rhythm. They had to score with like a minute or two to go at the very end there to even put 17 points on the board for – So, you know, for 56 minutes, they scored 10 points. And this is a team, Chris, that runs the ball religiously and is good at it. And I mean, they ran the ball 43 times for 173 yards. That's actually pretty respectable. That's not bad. But I think Fromm really let him down. He had an interception in overtime. He had a pick six interception regulation. Also had another interception later in the game, too. So he just had a garbage game. And the one thing that blew my mind was Will Muschamp, South Carolina's coach, I think almost tried to lose the game for himself. It was near the end of regulation. About, I think it was 48 seconds left. And South Carolina had, like, it was like fourth and two. And
right.
It would have been on their own 40. And this moron decides to try to kick a 57-yard field goal, which I've maybe never, ever seen done in college football history. I mean, I'm sure there's been a few, but not many. This dumbass kicks a 57-yard field goal, which misses. And then Georgia gets the ball at the 40-yard line with, like, 40 seconds to go with a timeout, and they can't even score. So they got so lucky there. And then Fromm throws a pick in OT, and then they miss another field goal. I mean, there were so many ways South Carolina tried to lose that game. But overall, they pulled it off, Chris. And I think what was even more impressive was it was an accident. But I believe in the second quarter or early third quarter, South Carolina's quarterback dropped back to make a pass. And a guy who was blitzing from Georgia tripped over the heel of an offensive lineman and went low on the quarterback. It wasn't cheap. It was just he tripped over a guy's heel, took out the quarterback's knee, and South Carolina had a backup quarterback who wasn't pretty. He was 6 of 12 for 39 yards and ran the ball 6 times for 28 yards, but he didn't do anything stupid and kept the team in the game, and they pulled off a massive upset. But I can't fathom kicking a 57-yard field goal and giving a team – you know, great field position. Because what are the odds, Chris, that goes in? Even if you trust your kicker, these are college kickers. And a 57-yard field goal is, I mean, the ball never even had a chance. I don't know. That blew my mind. But I'm happy South Carolina won anyways.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What'd you think of the Red River rivalry?
I'm with you. I was surprised at the low-scoring first half. The whole year, I've listened to people say Texas is hurt. Texas is hurt. Their defense is hurt. Like, nonstop, just Texas is hurt on defense, and I expected, okay, Oklahoma should have got to a good start. But to only score, you know, 10 points in the first half, it's like, you know, what's going on? Like, why is this offense struggling? So I think that Texas did all they could defensively in the first half. I do think there's some jitters in that game. I mean, that is a massive rivalry. You have kids who probably played against each other in high school and college and, you know, probably will in the pros. So maybe some jitters got to Jalen Hurts because he had a couple of interceptions in the first half that killed drives. You know, there was a couple of turnovers Oklahoma had, and they probably would have had a little more productive first half, Chris. And lastly, that CeeDee Lamb, oh, my God, that dude – had three incredible touchdowns. A couple of them, I mean, it was just like kind of like Randy Moss. Like, it just, he caught the ball and would avoid 4 to 5 tackles and go and score. If you haven't seen the highlights of the Oklahoma touchdowns, CeeDee Lamb had 10 catches, 171 yards, and 3 TDs. And his first TD, he literally caught the ball in the 30, juked about 3 people, ran and scored. It was pretty sweet. So credit to Texas for hanging in the first half. In the second half, it was an even score. It was 24-24. Oklahoma's got up a little earlier in the first half, but I'll give Texas credit. I think their defense was incredibly beat up. They played incredibly better, or I should say they played pretty good. But the biggest difference was Oklahoma's defense wasn't a laughing stock. Last year, Oklahoma's defense was so garbage, they fired their defense coordinator after this game. I remember you and I, Chris, talking about last year, like, their defense
was
like, it wasn't on the field. It was awful. And now you hold Texas to 3 points. I mean, this is a Texas team that has a pretty good offense this year. They scored it on LSU, you know, pretty easily. Not that LSU's defense is great, but Texas has had a great offense this year. And you hold them to 3 points in 30 minutes, that is a massive difference. Huge compared to last year. Last year, they scored at will. This year, you hold them to 3 points in 30 minutes, that's a huge win. And that coordinator they got, Grinch from Washington State, I heard he was great there, and he was doing the same thing Oklahoma. I think that was a massively great hire by Lincoln Riley. So all they need is a little bit of offense because, you know, they're off – excuse me. All they need is a little bit of defense because Oklahoma's offense is only always doing special.
Yeah. And just going back to that Georgia game real quick, I mean, it felt like they outplayed them beyond the turnovers. They had 30-16 first downs. They were 9-18 on third down. They outgained them 468-297. You know, they had to throw 52 times to get to 295 passing yards, so that's not great. But like you said, they ran for a 173 at 4 yards a clip, had almost half the amount of penalties. They had the ball 36-23. It really came down to that fumble and those picks, especially the costly one, and it proved to be very costly. And as far as the Texas-Oklahoma, you're right, man. That Lamb dude, it just seemed like, oh, that's a big gain. Oh, wow. Oh, it's beyond the – oh, he's going to score. You know, it went from, like, a great, like, gain and just an awesome, you know, breaking tackle, spin move, bulldoze, and kind of had it all. But Lamb is just something special to watch. And, you know, we talk – usually it's the quarterbacks, the running backs. That's usually who the Heisman guys are going to be. But this dude is – he's dangerous, dude. He is really dangerous, and obviously Jalen Hurts fitting right in, hit the ground running with the Sooners. Big game. This might be a rematch again. You never know. Obviously, there's other teams out there that Baylor still is alive as far as undefeated. So we'll see. Texas now has two losses, but is it really that bad, you know, to Oklahoma one and the other to LSU? So really not that big of a deal, but we'll see if they can you know, not drop another game and to be able to stay kind of in, you know, in range of Oklahoma to have that rematch. Wisconsin scored their fourth shutout. Four times now they've shut teams out. And this came against Michigan State. And we know we've documented Michigan State's problems on the offensive line. They can't run the ball like they normally do. But 38-0 is still 38-0. I mean, come on. Your score. Squad USC went, you know, neck and neck back and forth with Notre Dame. Notre Dame ended up winning 30-27. It was one I kind of just kept my eye on, and it looked like, oh, USC's back into it. Oh, Notre Dame kind of opened it up. But it was a competitive game, no doubt about it. Boise State just, you know, ran Hawaii 59-37. Utah put up a bunch of points, 52 as well. Michigan won. Louisville actually upset Wake Forest, number 19 at the time. They were unbeaten 62-59. That was a crazy game because Louisville was up on them. Wake Forest came all the way back. They ended up getting it done though, 62-59. And Louisville, I'm not going to sit there and say older back like back in 2005, 2006, or even with Teddy Bridgewater. They're not quite there yet, but they're definitely on the rise, no doubt about it. And more upsets inside the top 25. Baylor, well, this almost was an upset, actually. That was a double overtime win, Baylor over Texas Tech. Texas Tech's actually showing some life as a competitive team lately anyway. But Memphis got beat by Temple, 30-28. Cincinnati and Houston had a decent game as well. One of the games, though, I want to kind of talk about here, Penn State and Iowa. Now we know, you know, on the road at Iowa at night is always a difficult task, and Penn State was up to it. Now it was a grinded out ugly game. Obviously they won 17-12. Not a whole lot to talk about. I mean, you know, you had Iowa come out and get a little 3-point lead. Then they were down, you know, 7-3. Iowa missed a field goal. They managed to get it to 7-6 at half, and then it was 7-6 for a while. They ended up fumbling on a decent drive, which led to a field goal. They had a late interception. They did this late as well. They had a 12-play drive. I think it was 57 yards or something like that, 67 yards. They did score to make it 17-12, but they just couldn't, you know, get over the hump, and Penn State ended the game. They ended up getting the win. And now Penn State, you know, after kind of a weird start, especially that Buffalo game on, I think it was on Fox, during primetime, they looked like crap for that half. And ever since that second half, they have just been zooming on offense. Their defense has a really good defensive line. They say anyway that it's one of the most athletic fronts that they've had under the current regime. They were 10-9 on third down, so the efficiency was there. They ran about 100 yards more than Iowa. They did have a lot of penalties compared to Iowa. Iowa only had one penalty for 5 yards, but they had two costly turnovers. And that was basically the story of the game. Very winnable, very tight. I figured Iowa would do it. Both of us did. But Penn State came on the road, got a big win in a tough place to win. And now a lot of people are kind of, you know, looking at their focus now. Michigan State seems like they're not up to par. We don't know where Michigan is still. We're going to find out more about that in week 8. But what'd you think about this game? Iowa just couldn't quite put points up and move the ball enough.
It is weird to see Iowa only have 70 yards rushing. It seems like they're a team that almost every year has a running back who's going to be an NFL draft pick. And you run the ball 30 times and get 70 yards in college football. I mean, those numbers are almost unheard of, Chris. I don't know. And yeah, I give Iowa defense credit. They played a hell of a game against Michigan and lost. Now Penn State's quarterback Clifford was 12 of 24 for 117 yards. Like, that's very hard to do too. So clearly, both defenses had a pretty damn good day. I guess you could say Iowa's run defense was kind of bad. They gave up 177 yards, but Penn State ran the ball 53 times. So I think this is just the second week in a row over Iowa where your offense kind of lets you down. I mean, you've given up, 27 points in the last two games, and you've lost. That's normally the recipe for a 2-0 stretch. So whatever the issue is, Stanley, I guess, just needs to be a little more productive in some way, shape, or form. He was 25-43 for 286. That's not awful, but you only scored 12 points on the night. And your running attack was almost non-existent. So obviously Iowa's offensive line is lacking something. It's just they always seem to be a typical ground-and-pound team, Chris. And to see them score 15 points in the past two games, it's like, huh. And this is a team that was ranked 17th and, you know, off to a pretty good start this year. But maybe the offensive issues are starting to get exploited out. They're facing better teams like Penn State and Michigan.
Yeah, and they did lose some talent, no doubt about it. Obviously, the tight end was a, you know, talk about a target that can just get you a third down, keep drives alive, red zone stuff. That has to play a part as well. But Penn State now looking on the up and up. It's too bad they got to play Minnesota, though. That's going to be tough. But we'll talk about that later. Let's get to LSU and Florida. This was the highest ranked versus ranked game, number 5 against number 7. And it lived up to it. And much like, you know, we thought, okay, well, I shouldn't say much like. It turned into what we thought maybe the Red River rivalry would be, whereas I thought, you know, 20-17, 27-23 or something like that. I didn't see them just being able to score at will on each other. Both, I mean, LSU's defense is not where it's been, but Florida's defense this year has looked really good. They just kind of matched scores. It was 7-7. 14-14, 21-21. Florida came out, got that lead 28-21. LSU tied it up, and then the defense came out with back-to-back 3-and-out plays. One of them, it was 3 plays, negative 21. Started getting after the quarterback, and there was a couple of times the LSU cornerbacks almost got the interception, just barely tipped the ball away. Like, they were so close to getting an interception, and that obviously it was just a matter of time. I'm watching that game going, at some point they're going to get a pick here. And sure enough, they did. It was 35-28 at the time. LSU had just taken a lead. Florida was on a 12 play, 76 yard drive, 5:06 it lasted. And there was a pick, you know, at a crucial, crucial time. Then they went right back down. LSU did put them up by 2 touchdowns. And then there was a turnover on down. So it's very crucial way to kind of end the game. And also that defense, you know, it was, I'd say, a bend that didn't break type defense. LSU was like the all-purpose. We put up 293 passing, but we also got to 218. And they only ran the ball 24 times to get to 218. That's 9.1 a carry, which is ridiculous. Whereas you saw Florida really, you know, maintain that run with 40 carries. Got to 146. That's pretty good. Came down to a turnover. But look at this. I mean, it seemed like Florida had the ball the whole game. It was just quick strike. It's so funny to talk about LSU as a quick strike offense and actually scoring, not just field goals. You know what I mean? But it was 38-19 to 21-41. That was the time of possession. That's freaking nuts, man. But anyway, LSU just keeps it going. I guess we're going to have to worry about their defense when push comes to shove, because it's sure not their offense this year.
Yeah, it is kind of just strange. Like, this is one of the better defensive draft, like, bases in, you know, for the NFL. You always talk about LSU defensive players, and normally it's the DBs, but, you know, there's been the Vikings have a D-line guy who's a freak of nature. You know, they had a linebacker go fourth overall last year in the NFL, so their defense was normally always pretty, you know, loaded with stars. But this is the first year where it's, I would say, average. But you have an offense that is maybe top three in the country. So it is kind of weird to fathom how much of a difference that is. I mean, but, you know, Burrow, again, 21-24 for 293 and a 96 quarterback rating. I mean, that dude, I give him tons of credit, because last year he had that game where he missed 17 passes in a row. So whatever he did in the offseason with Coach O, I mean, it's just remarkable that you go from a game manager quarterback that people kind of laugh at you on the shows about to now a guy who's like in the leading spot for the Heisman or very well in the race. So I don't know. I'm with you, Chris. It's just hard to fathom. Now they have a good offense, but I think that defense got to get a little bit better, because I know we haven't heard much about him this year because we haven't played those games, but that there's still a man named Nick Saban, and he's still got a quarterback named Tua. And I don't think this LSU offense is clicking quite like Bama was last year. So in a couple of weeks, that might be something crazy. But if you're LSU, just keep winning, keep having great games, and keep taking care of business. And for Coach O, that is another win against a top 10 team. I've always kind of liked the guy because the USC did pretty well. But I would say 93% of sports society thought it was a stupid hire. You know, the guy can't coach. He's been bad at his jobs before. All he can do is a recruiter. That dude, I mean, Coach O, he basically doesn't lose games against ranked teams unless Bama. So you can't ask for a much better job than what he's done there, Chris. I know we repeat this all the time, but he keeps winning top 10 games, and he doesn't lose besides Saban. So a remarkable job. And I guess he'll probably load up his defense a little bit next year again. But, man, if that offense keeps playing, they're a scary, scary damn team with a quarterback who's just most improved player of the year for me.
So let me get this straight. Nick Saban and Tua. I'm going to have to Google that. Huh. So you're saying they're pretty good, huh?
They're not too bad.
Alabama Crimson Tide. Okay. I'll look them up. I'll use Google machine and see what I find. You know, maybe it's the quick strike offense that the defense is having problems. We're like, hey, guys, can you slow it down a little bit? You know, like, we're on the field a lot. And I just named that 38 minutes. I mean, how many times do you see a 38-minute time of possession? So maybe it's just like, hey, try to use a screen pass once in a while. Maybe you could get Fournette's brother or something on there. We could just give the ball to him. Because you know they got running backs. Obviously, they always got running
True.
Back. So who knows? Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just making excuses up. One thing we know is Coach O brought in the right O for coordinator. That is for sure. And like you said, all he keeps doing is winning against, you know, high profile games. He beat Central Florida last year too, when they were quote unquote Central Florida. Another game I want to hone in on: Arizona State and Washington State. Arizona State got it done 38-34, back and forth game. Washington State got off to a good lead. It was 10-0. think it got to 17-7 at half. They kind of went back and forth. I can't say enough about Herm Edwards. We've obviously documented this as well. We've talked about this. It sounds like a broken record, but the guy's turning the program around. Now, of course, Washington State quarterback Gordon, anytime you're going to be, you know, with the Cougars, you're going to put up some numbers, and that's exactly what he did. 44 completions on 64 attempts, 456, 3 touchdowns, no picks, but a true freshman, Daniels, had 3 touchdowns himself, 26 of 36 for 366, or no, 363, and they had a running game to boot. I'll tell you what, man, and it seems like the whole defensive, anyone on scholarship, looks like they played on defense, just judging by their tackle. You know, when they have, like, shows all the people that got a tackle? 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, we're talking like 20 dudes got tackles in that game. Jones led the way. But another week, another big game, another victory for Arizona State. And they're sitting pretty right now at, what are they, 5-1 or 6-1 or something like that? Yeah, they're 5-1. And they're doing it with this quarterback who keeps getting better and better. And even when he struggled like he did against Michigan State early in the year, he still managed to do something down the stretch to win the game.
For them to be ranked at this, I mean, I'm with you. They're having a phenomenal year. Herm Edwards has this thing figured out, and he's doing a hell of a job. I think the thing that's killing Washington State is just that UCLA meltdown. I think that that's kind of laid a lingering effect. I mean, Leach has called it, he called his players, like, slow and dumb after the Utah loss. I mean, I think that guy, it's just not having a good year for the offensive guru up in Washington. But, you know, you gave up, what, 38 points in, like, 10 minutes or something? And, you know, they beat New Mexico State. They beat some Northern Colorado. They beat Houston. You know, you're 3-0, like usual. Washington State's going 9-10 games. And then you're playing, you know, massively great football against UCLA, and then your defense just craps the bed. All of a sudden, you know, you're on a three-game losing streak. So I think what happened, you know, not to take credit away from Herm Edwards, but I think, you know, this – I think their three-game losing streak is due to the meltdown they had, like, 3 weeks ago. And that could be something that just bothers them for, you know, the rest of the year, you know, or at least for a little longer, or they can't quite get a rhythm, or, you know, you're just – some part of the season seems off. I mean, if I had to guess it, I would say that because for the past however many years we've done this podcast, that Mike Leach going on a three-game losing streak with an offense he has, which is normally unstoppable against most teams, it just seems weird, Chris. It doesn't seem like a Mike Leach situation. So I think that Matt pulled it up. They were up 42-17. I think that, you know, collapse they had is maybe lingering into later games because I don't recall the last time Washington State was ever 3-3 to start the season with Mike Leach as the head guy.
Yeah, that could be. They also had such a, you know, last two seasons they did a lot of damage. You know what I mean? They really did, especially last year. So maybe they're just, you know, young and dumb, like he says. No, maybe they're just, you know, like they had their season last year. And now they're kind of recouping, rebuilding to an extent.
True.
But I'll tell you what, man, Arizona State is on the up and up, no doubt about it. And Herm Edwards has barely even sunk his teeth into recruiting, if you think about it, because he's only been there for – this is only, what, his second year, right, or third year? Is this his third year? No, it's his second year. It's his second year, isn't it? I think. Wow.
It is.
Anyway. So yeah, we're definitely going to, I mean, they keep winning. We're going to have to keep talking about them. Obviously, they got another big game coming up against Utah this week. So we'll see if they can keep, that streak going. The Pac-12, there's been, I mean, just some really big marquee matchups this week. And obviously Penn State and Michigan stand out as the top, game, I guess you could say, but, we'll see. As far as on a local front, Minnesota moves to 6-0 for the first time since 2003 with a 34-7 dismantling of Nebraska. They had a three-headed monster at running back. One of them had 18, 13, and 15 carries. Just spread it all around. Got the two seniors in Brooks and Smith. Then Ibrahim is the true sophomore who had 1,000 yards as a true freshman when those two seniors last year were hurt. But they ran 49 times for 322, four touchdowns at 6.6 a clip. And it just kind of reminds me of those Mike Rozier 1980 games when Nebraska would just come in and just destroy people. I remember them coming into the Metrodome when I was a little kid, and they just pummeled them. It was 14-0 at half. Just really never looked back from there. The Gophers are 6-0. They're 10-2 in their last 12, Marshall, which is crazy, right? Because those are all Power 5 teams too, the last 12. And well, no, actually they're not. Now, oh wait, no, they're not. Now I think about that. But 10-2, right? And they have an 8-game winning streak from last year. That's the 8-game winning streak. Okay, it's pretty long in college football. That's really long, right? But you'd have to go back to the 1948-49 season of the Golden Gophers to find a team that won 8 straight. That's kind of putting it all in perspective. But my Gophers got the win. And also the other team that I follow and have followed since I was a kid was Miami. And they won 17-9 at home over a ranked Virginia team who played Notre Dame pretty respectfully. They got out early this time and got up 7-0 instead of getting down from mistakes 21-0. Miami got up 7-0. Then the score just kind of lingered, and they had two fourth-quarter drives that they scored points on too. Right? That's how they got the other 10 points. And when they needed it, they got it. I figured it'd be a grinded-out game because it was two defensive teams. That's basically what they're built on. So that was nice, too, that Miami got up to 3-3. It's funny. They could be 4-2. I mean, you could make an argument. It could be 5-1. I would never say, oh, they could be 6-0 because, you know, you can't get down that many times and screw yourself over. But they could easily be 4-2, and I would have been happy at 5-1. But, hey. You know, it is what it is. But, yeah, P.J. Fleck has got this gopher train going, man. And like he says, you know, you just got to keep rowing the boat. You just keep a paddle
roll
in the
boat,
water.
Roll the boat.
Yeah, he is just a cheesy dude, but it works in college.
It does. It does. For my home front, Mizzou won. That was good. Lane Kiffin won. That dude, he's going to win his Conference USA second title. I'm feeling it. Go Lane Kiffin, get those boys rolling. And USC played respectable, but Clay Helton lost another big game. Nothing new there. He's a good coach. Might be a better coach at a different place, though. So some stuff doesn't change, Chris. Clay Helton lets another game go away where they could have an upset win on the road. It's just the guy doesn't believe in those types of wins. And if you could maybe move on for maybe a 2-minute gap, your co-host will be shortly back.
Okay, that'll work. These things happen. Life gets in the way. You just need to take a little break. I think I mentioned this early. I'm not totally sure. Temple, who had previously beat a ranked opponent. They had beaten a ranked opponent. Now they won back-to-back against, I think it was the first time in school history that Temple beat back-to-back ranked opponents, beating Memphis in a tight, tight game. Like I said, I still can't believe the Badgers. I figured they'd win cleanly. In fact, that was one of my easy money take-it-to-the-window bets or talking points was they would win by 10 points for sure. Take it to the window, and they won, I think. Yeah, they didn't even give up a point. That's freaking crazy. Alabama made it 5 consecutive games, scoring at least 45 points. They won 47-28 over A&M. The University of Clemson kept it rolling real easy, went over Florida State. No surprise there, but They extended the longest winning streak in the FBS to 21. That was a little surprising there. But like I said, we got a lot to talk about here as far as betting lines against the spreads, upsets, and just straight up predictions. We have number 7 Penn State versus number 16 Michigan, number 13 Utah versus number 17 Arizona State, number 12 Oregon, and versus number 25 Washington. And there are some games that are under the radar and just kind of lingering. If you look at number 18 Baylor, who barely got by Texas Tech, needed double overtime to do it, they're still unbeaten. They have to go on the road at Oklahoma State. That'll be interesting. And Temple has a chance. You know, I was saying how they won back-to-back for the first time in school history against ranked team. Now they go against another ranked team, number 19 SMU, who actually beat TCU and is having a really, really good season. So there are a couple of, you know, barn burner type games that should just turn out to be really good. I believe my co-host is back now. Is that a true statement, sir?
Yeah. Hey, we forgot to lead off the show with something. How dare we do this, Chris? How did we miss a mini taper parade, whatever, ticker tape parade, for Tennessee winning an SEC football game? The Volunteers beat Mississippi State. I'm not sure if Tennessee fans thought they'd win an SEC game this year, but a 20-10 victory. So for 1 week of the year, they're not a complete laughing stock. I mean, I could give two shits about Tennessee, but they won an SEC game, so maybe for 1 week, Jeremy Pruitt can have a somewhat peaceful work week, just with our random Tennessee update.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is. It's not maybe for 1 week. It is going to be 1 week because they play Bama. They go right to Bama.
Oh, Lord.
They might as well just have a little fun. It's over. That was a good run.
All that momentum
it's
they
done.
Gained.
Yeah, they're going to get smacked all over the place. They're favored to lose by 34.5. Are you going to go out on a limb and say that they can sneak under that? Are you willing to do that?
If Lane Kiffin came back and coached them, they would, but he ain't coming back. You know, he's off to a new horizon. And if you did
New Horizon, is that the name of the league he coaches in?
Also, speaking of SEC play, my take it to the window, automatic 4-star lock over in Missouri and Ole Miss. Cha-ching. That was a good bet. I'm nervous to always bet overs with my own money, but I sure seem to like picking them. So maybe I should be a little more intelligent, and when I go with a gut feeling, kind of bet it along too. But over in the Ole Miss-Mizzou game, cashed in. I believe it cashed in by the third quarter. So if you felt like listening to me and felt like betting me over, got a little more money in your pocket after the Mizzou game went over.
There you have it. There you have it. As far as the couple of these games that we're going to predict and then kind of go through, like I said, against the spread and upsets and all that type of thing, just good games that'll be worth watching or paying attention to in the second half. We'll get into those in a little bit, but got a big matchup here with Michigan in Penn State. Penn State unbeaten. Of course, Michigan, their only loss was a beatdown loss by the hands of the Badgers. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, my co-host's favorite index out of them all, 78.6 is the percentage that they give for the Nittany Lions to beat the Wolverines. They will be at home. The over-under is 45.5 and 9 points. It's a 9-point spread they got Penn State at. Now, coming into the season, you kind of figured it'd be Shea Patterson that would be, well, definitely the more experienced quarterback, but just the quarterback that would be the more high profile, right? That the quarterback that you'd say, oh, that guy is better, but Clifford for Penn State is coming in hot. 13 TDs, only 2 interceptions, and they're running the ball pretty well. What says you about this game? Obviously, you know, Michigan has played a tougher schedule. I think that's pretty clean, you know, clear. They had to play Iowa as well, and it was a close game, much like that game, actually, now that I think about it. They had the home field, though, so that must have helped as well. To me, it feels like this should be more like a five and a half, you know, something like that. 9 points seems like a lot. Obviously, you have the three-point, you know, cushion for being home, but that gets you 6 points. I don't know, man. What's your gut feeling coming into this Michigan-Penn State game?
I think that looking from how Penn State's quarterback did against Iowa's defense, he was, 12 of 24 for like a buck 22. I would expect Penn State's quarterback to do the same against Michigan's defense, which is probably just as good. Obviously, when a quarterback, especially in college, plays at home, that's a massive boost, I would assume, in most stats. But I think Penn State's probably going to struggle to score. And as we know, Michigan's offense is still nothing to brag about. They beat Iowa, but they scored 10 points and won the game. So I would expect a very low-scoring game. With that said, Chris, I'm with you. I would not take the Penn State minus 9. Again, I think that's the Vegas' way of saying, hey, we still don't believe in Michigan, which is fair. But in a defensive battle of a pretty, not rivalry game, but of a pretty normally well-contested game each year, I would lean towards just a low-scoring kind of 23-20 kind of score, and I would take Michigan with the 9 points. I think that's being generous. And maybe one of these weeks, maybe Michigan's offense will break out to do something. You know, possibly, Chris, possibly. It could happen.
All right, so who are you picking? You're going to Michigan sneak under the spread.
I'll take Michigan in the upset. I've never been a huge fan of Penn State's head coach. I think the guy's kind of a jerk. So with that being said, I'll take Michigan to win.
But Harbaugh's a nice guy, though, huh? Harbaugh's a nice guy.
He
never has said anything prickish. I'm surprised you still like Harbaugh after he tried to fight your head coach, USC head coach, years back.
I put him above the pedestal, James Franklin. I'll just say that.
Okay, that's fair. So you got Michigan. You're going.
I'll take
Michigan
in the upset win. Yes, I'll take them to knock out Penn State. Yes.
And they destroyed them last year too. Michigan did. So that's got to be on their mind. I'm kind of going back and forth with this one. You start to look at some of the stats, and it's misleading because you know they say, "Oh, they're only giving up 160 yards passing." Yeah, but they've gone against mostly rushing. I'm talking about Michigan, mostly rushing teams. So Wisconsin, Army, Iowa. So I don't know, man. I'm really stuck on this. I will say, though, the against the spread looks good for Michigan to sneak under. Like you said, I agree with that. I'm going under with the 45.5. I'm going to say that Penn State pulls off the game. Deep in the fourth quarter, they end up getting the job done. But, you know, this will really help Harbaugh. You know, that Iowa game kind of calmed down some folks. But if he can go up, especially with an undefeated, about as hot as they're going to get Penn State team right now, which a lot of people didn't really pick them to go far this year. So we'll see. But I'm going to go with Penn State. I think, you know, the third big matchup, it's hard to take Michigan again. You see what I'm saying? I took Michigan against Wisconsin. I fought it against Iowa, but I ended up taking them. And now I'm feeling like, man, can I go to the well again? I think I'm going to pick against them this week. But like I said, it'll be a fourth quarter game. Speaking of what probably will be a fourth quarter game, Utah, number 13 hosts, number 17 Arizona State, a team that we've talked about a whole lot. And, you know, Huntley is not the prettiest technical quarterback. But if you look at his quarterback rating and if you look at what he does for his team, he's a pretty solid quarterback. I'm all sorts of like, confused here, Marshall. Okay, 48.5 is the over-under. That's cool. I get it. 14 points. Now, I understand Utah's at home. I also understand Utah plays really well at home. In fact, they just beat someone handedly not long ago at home. But, dude, really? 14 points? You're going to do that to Herm Edwards? 82.6 says your favorite ESPN football power index. I'm obviously going against the spread. What are your thoughts here, man? We can't just bandwagon too much with Herm, that we love him so much that we're going to pick him all the time with Arizona State. But for Christ's sake, can the Sun Devils get a little respect? 14 points seems like just a little too much for me.
I'm with you. Unless there's some story we missed, like their quarterback's out or the running back's out, I haven't seen anything that says that. Yeah, that's way too much. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's got a defense that always plays hard for him. Utah is not exactly a high-scoring football team. I mean, they score points, but they're not like the LSU, Oklahoma running gun on you. This is mind-blowing. I'll give Utah credit, but I'm with you, Chris. I would gladly take the minus 14, unless there's but even in college football, a massive injury. I mean, that says a lot. I will gladly take Arizona State with the points there. There's no reason Herm Edwards can't beat them. He beat Michigan State. He beat Cal. He beat Washington State. That guy is on a roll. And, again, I agree Utah should be favored. But, man, 14 points, that's a very generous line. I got nothing. I don't know. I normally agree with Vegas this year. Normally in Vegas does stuff like this, it's for a reason. But this one, I'm going to venture outside and go against Vegas. Now watch, we'll do our podcast next week, and it's going to be a Utah 36-0 win. We're going to look at pools.
Well, but Central.
I'm willing to roll the dice there and take Arizona State because, I think that's too much respect unless there's an injury bug that we're not aware about.
Yeah, I'm looking right now just to double check, and it's like, I'm not seeing any injuries, dude. I'm not seeing any injuries at all.
Wow.
Huh.
I don't know that.
That's a shock, dude. Even if it doesn't happen, it's still a freaking shocker to me. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I do think Utah is going to win the game, though.
Sure.
I'll say that. They're a really good club, and they play really good at home. We've documented that before. So I got Utah winning the game. But, yeah, I'm a little, scratching my head on that one. So that was one of the Pac-12 marquee matchups for the week. We do have another one, number 12, Oregon versus who knows what we're going to get, number 25, Washington. We know they can play defense. We know they have a young quarterback who is pretty good at times. He's looked okay. They were in a tight game for a while with Arizona until they ran away with it, 51-27. They surprisingly, 2 weeks ago, dropped a game to Stanford where they're just kind of subdued. They do have some good wins, though. Hawaii's a good win. USC's a good win. BYU, not so much this year, but still not an easy club. But Oregon, they've managed to play defense this year. Now, you can't really judge it all the way because they played a bunch of teams that don't score. Cal and Stanford, Colorado kind of does. They played Montana. That really doesn't count. Nevada's a pretty good club. They beat him 77-6. What says you about this one, man? We got a 51 is the over-under, and Oregon on the road has the three-point advantage on the spread, so it's about a six-point game with the home cooking for Washington. Will the Huskies kind of calm their season down a little bit and move to 6-2, or and also finally have Oregon drop a Pac-12 game? That's going to be obviously something they need. Or is Oregon just going to keep the ball rolling and kind of played great on offense and pretty damn solid on defense.
I think that Oregon moves to 4-0. I think that they, for once, have a really good defense. They normally always used to be the offensive team, but I think that defense is legit. As we know, Washington's offense is very inconsistent at times, as you just said. So I lean to Oregon with the – obviously, I'll take them with the points, too. I just think you have a bet that Oregon is the best of the four components of both teams' offenses, both teams' defenses. That Oregon defense is really good. And I think that Oregon's offense can find a way to do enough, and they'll find a way to get the victory in Washington. Washington, that team is too inconsistent. I told you that last week. I never bet them because you just never quite know. The defense will always be respectable, but that offense, it comes and goes, and I don't like to rely on teams that come and go. So I'll take Oregon Ducks to move to 4-0 in the Pac-12.
Here, I thought that I'd be able to get one and we'd be on the opposite of one this one. But, yeah, I think Oregon's going to come in there with the more experienced quarterback, like you said, the better defense. And, you know, they kind of need this win to be like, hey, so big deal, we barely lost to Auburn in game one. They can move to 6-1 overall, like you said, undefeated in the Pac-12. So I'm there with you on that one. There's a couple of games that I think are just going to be really, really fun to watch. And also –
Hey, no, brother.
Go ahead.
How about I call you back because my phone always likes to drop in an hour. So if I hang up and call right back in, will I still be good to go?
Yeah, you'll be good. Yep.
Okay. I'll be right back.
All right. Cool. All right. No big deal. He is true, or he does have a point there. So South Carolina – we talked about that against the spread pick the week after a huge upset happens, right? Well, they're playing Florida. South Carolina's at home playing Florida. Florida's a 6-point favorite. You know, it's tough for me to sneak under the spread in that situation. 6 points isn't given them much, but I don't know, man. Might be worth taking a flyer out. SMU still undefeated at 6-0. Temple has a chance to win against three ranked teams in a row. They just went back to back a school record. SMU is the favorite 7.5, but I think that's going to be a really good game. And that's one of those where I'm looking, I'm thinking, huh, I might go with the upset there. But that's a tough one because then I got to pick Temple and upset back-to-back weeks. Little shaky on that. That one, Oklahoma State hosts undefeated Baylor. Baylor's only a 3.5, so that's a pick-em game, basically a 50-50 game. I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma State upsets Baylor there. Wouldn't be a big upset, but I wouldn't be surprised, that's for sure. And then even though BYU is 2-4 this year, Boise State is only a 6.5-point favorite. Kind of makes me feel like that one's a take it to the window. They'll get it done. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, just unmute them and make sure we're all good to go. I just went over a variety of games that are kind of on that hardcore, you know, barn burner level or against the spread. Just a couple of them. Just to kind of update you on that South Carolina against the spread the week after that 20-plus underdog thing, that stat since 2000. Florida, they're playing Florida. South Carolina's at home, and it's a 6-point spread in favor, of course, of Florida. So that's one to keep an eye on. You know, I think Louisville – is going to lose to Clemson. However, I think they can lose by less than 24.5. So that's one of those that I'd look and go, yeah, that's a spread that I feel comfortable with. I also mentioned how Baylor is on upset alert at Oklahoma State as a 3.5-point favorite. They barely beat Texas Tech. The other shoe's got to fall at some point. Just a couple of games I'm kind of going over, you know?
I think you might have just crossed your eyes up a little bit because I was looking. I think Oklahoma State's -3.5. So I think that – so
Oh, yeah.
Are you saying?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I
got you. Yeah. Good call. You're right. You're right. My bad. I thought Baylor was my favorite.
One thing I would like, again, going for overs again, Indiana against Maryland. Maryland can score against bad teams, and I don't think Indiana is quite as great as normal, but Indiana can score too. That over-under is 58. Indiana's minus 5.5 at Maryland. I think that's basically saying that, hey, Maryland's not going to stop you. And Maryland should score a little, so I would lean the over in that, and I should probably bet that game and actually back up myself for once. and I would not be surprised if Georgia kind of cleaned house on Kentucky. Georgia's minus 25. I know that's a lot of points, but Georgia's probably going to be pretty pissed off. Kentucky's been dealing with a backup quarterback this year who's learning to kind of grow into the system, get his feet wet. And now he's walking into Georgia. He's going to be wanting, you know, they're going to be going for blood. I would maybe lean towards Georgia this week after their massive letdown last week. I would imagine, Chris, they come back with a little bit of vengeance because they're out of the playoff picture. I mean, they're not dead. Obviously, that loss did not help them at all. But I'd imagine Georgia's probably pretty ticked off and having a pretty rough week in practice this week.
Yeah, I would hope so. Just a couple of good games. Do they mean a lot? Yeah, to the programs they do. Sure, some of them are still alive as far as trying to win their side of the conference race. But just good games. These fall in the ACC. UNC on the road is a 3.5-point favorite on the road at Va Tech. I think that's a take it to the window. Virginia at home 3.5 to Duke. That's a 50-50 game. I'm taking it to the window that that's going to be a fourth quarter game, but that's about it. Those are some games that are just tight. You know, you're just looking at it and you're like, huh, not sure who's going to win that, but I bet you there'll be, you know, the hardcore barn burner of variety. Also, there was one more I wanted to mention in that frame, but I just lost it. Any other games that you want to talk about right now? The Gophers are going against Rutgers, knock on wood. They haven't been a 29.5-point favorite since 2006.
God bless you, Jay.
Yeah, this is when Temple was just hot garbage. They're a lot better now. But they ended up winning the game by like 40 points. But so you have Rutgers, and Miami is taking on Georgia Tech, and they're in flux right now. They're not the Georgia Tech that we're used to seeing as far as them in general. They're obviously, you know, like I said, in flux. It's going to take them a little while to get, you know, to know what they're going to do with the coach and whatnot. Another good game, Iowa State, who is starting to really come alive. They are 7-point favorite on the road at Texas Tech. That could just be fun to watch. Any other games that you want to speak upon before we get to the crappy pick of the week, sir?
I would say we're good. I'm feeling pretty good. Cal minus 10.5 against Oregon State. That Oregon State team scores a lot of points, but I think they're going to have issues with Cal. And not to mention, Oregon State just got smoked by Utah this last weekend. So I think now Utah kills you, now you got to play Cal. That's kind of a tough back-to-back stretch there for Oregon State. So I would lean towards Cal there. And, unless K-State's quarterback is hurt, I don't think TCU should be favored at K-State. I know K-State's 0-2 in the Big 12. And they got the new coach there from NDSU where I went to school, and they're kind of becoming a running beat-em-up team. But TCU got murdered by Iowa State, and I can't take a team like that who's favored at K-State. So I would lean K-State for a fun gambling pick. To recap last week, which was, you know, a point spread that jumped out to me, like, how the hell are they favored? Well, Vegas does know what they're doing occasionally. The Colorado State Rams, I believe it's Rams, won 35-21 against New Mexico. New Mexico, Chris, I don't think they gave up quite as many yards as normal. I believe they were giving up about 580 yards a game. It wasn't that bad. I think they gave up, what was it? Team stats here. Well, anyways, they lost 35-21. Okay. So the New Mexico Lobos had another tough game. But yeah, they only gave up, they gave up 551 yards. So a little bit under season average. So to recall the listeners, did you take the Colorado State Rams or the Lobos last week?
I took the Rams. Hello? Marshall, did you drop?
Oh, sorry.
That's weird.
So, yeah, we offered free money. Chris moves to 5-2 on the year with the point spread affected in almost every pick except the first one of the year, which was like a 14-point deal. But actually, that covered. So the Colorado State Rams won 35-21 in a crafty pick of the week. Now, on to the next week of the year. There's a couple of
– We should start calling it the hot garbage pick of the week.
That actually does have a pretty nice ratio, the hot garbage pick of the week.
The crafty, crappy, hot garbage pick of the week. Okay, this is beginning to be a mouthful here. Maybe we shouldn't change it.
Rice jumps off the table to me, but they've actually played hard in almost every game. So I don't believe they actually deserve the 2-6 record that is attached to that team's hip. So I'm letting them slide. We're going back to the no, that spreads off.
You mentioned Rice. Because they're 0-6, dude.
I know, but they've been covering point spreads. I think that says something about a team's character. If you can't win but you can cover the point spread, I think that shows you got heart and grit, and I respect that. And they've already been put on the crafty pick of the week anyways. So we're going to go a little closer to home, a little closer to where you reside, where I used to reside. And we were having a massive matchup of Northern Illinois against Miami of Ohio. This is a MAC matchup. Northern Illinois is 2-4 and 1-1 in the MAC. They're face off against Miami, who's 2-4, 1-1 in the MAC. So we have even opponents. Okay, this game is at Jaeger Stadium. I believe they serve Jaeger shots every time the team scores a touchdown, even though it's spelled Y-A-G-E-R. I believe there's Jaeger Meister
Florida
at the
game. It's probably every time they get past the 50-yard line, if we're honest, you know.
There is a 2.5-point road favorite over under a 48. You have the Huskies against the Red Hawks. We have animals face off against each other, which is always an important component factor. We always like to figure out, if the mascots fought each other, who would win? I'd like to favor the Husky over here over a bird, but I will let my co-host break down this wonderful MAC 130 matchup at Jaegermeister Stadium.
So you do know that Rice was they're 0-6, but they were favored by 4 points on the road. that tells you how bad the team they're playing. Yeah, we haven't won a game, but we're going on the road, and they got us winning. So, hey, we'll take it.
Ben Rice. I'm Ben Rice. Even if it's $20, I'm putting money on Rice this week.
This is a good matchup, though. You're right. One thing that stands out to me is Miami can't play a lick of defense. Giving up 37 points. Not that the Huskies are doing great, giving up 29.3. Sometimes you can look at who did they play? Who did they play? They did play Cincinnati. They did play Ohio State. Got beat 76-5. That's what that Nebraska Gopher game was like back in the day, dude. This is a really good game, dude. I'm excited for this one. Oh, man. And, geez, I mean, what does Miami do on offense? They're just horrendous on offense. Jesus. But then again, they're actually averaging more points. I guess, sometimes yards can be deceiving. But right now the Huskies are averaging basically 388 a game total yards to 260. That's freaking bad, dude. My God. And they give up 200 yards in the okay, but they can't run. Okay, you know what? I'm going home. I'm going Miami. No, not that Miami. Miami of Ohio. I'm going with the Red Hawks. I think there's going to be a pack of Red Hawks, and that will swoop down on the Husky and just tear them apart. And, you know, whoever wins, win or lose, they got Yagi. They got Yagi at the stadium. Jaeger Stadium. Tickets start as low as $22. That's pretty damn good. So, yeah, forget the Huskies. I'm going with the Red Hawks. I'm going with the home team. The home team club, sure, they're a little bit of an underdog. I guess that would be like a 5.5 points being that they're at home. So, yeah, I'm going with the home dog on this one, Miami of Ohio.
I'm doing one quick research thing here first. Just I want to check one fact about this game that I think would make it a little more entertaining. Okay. Just in case you didn't know this, Chris, Miami of Ohio's starting quarterback, Brett Gabbert, is related to Blaine Gabbert, the famous massive producing NFL quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Do you feel better or worse now knowing that the team you chose as quarterback is a younger brother of Blaine Gabbert, who had a up-and-down NFL career, to say the least?
Yeah, I'd say to say the least. That's really saving him. But I'll take the brother because it's the bloodline. We're talking college, and he was the guy in college. So, yeah, I'm going with the – I was going to say junior, but that would be weird because it's brother. So they're not from the South, are they? Just kidding. Just kidding. I know a lot of the audience is from the South. Just kidding. I'm just a northern asshole that makes dumb Southern jokes. But no, I may put money on this one just because of that fact, actually.
I'm sure Blaine Gabbert will be in attendance unless he's being a third-string quarterback for some team in the NFL this week. So – on that note, another beautiful edition of the Crafty Crafty Pick of the Week and another beautiful podcast. Chris's boys are just on fire. The Golden Gophers are already bowl eligible. PJ Fleck is rolling the boat with oars everywhere. And it's a fun time of the year for him because college basketball normally causes my co-host to consume some type of product of some sort, you know, to get through the season. So I'm happy for his Gophers. And I have no faith in my USC Trojans, but fight on anyways. Until next week, I hope I get to pop some champagne tonight. I hope my Nationals make the World Series. I hope we have another beautiful week of college football. The boys are out. Have a safe week with your family. Peace.